Welcome back, everybody. Today, we're going to be looking into expertise centers for rare diseases in the Netherlands.
Okay.
It sounds pretty simple, right? Like, oh, you know, you've got a rare disease. We have an expertise center to treat it.
Uh-huh.
But there's a new academic report that looks into the legal side of designating these centers. And it turns out it's pretty complicated.
It is. There are some really surprising issues. And the report actually even gives some recommendations on how to improve the process.
So before we jump into all the legal details, maybe give us a quick overview. Why are these expertise centers such a big deal?
Well, imagine you're dealing with a rare disease, something that most doctors maybe have never even heard of before.
Right.
Expertise centers are meant to be like a central hub, you know, bringing together the top specialists in the field and doing research.
So it's like that one place where, you know, you can get the best possible care and treatment.
Exactly. But how do they actually decide which institutions get to be called an expertise center? That's where things get complicated.
Okay, so this new report is like shining a light on that whole decision-making process.
Yep.
And it seems like to really understand this whole thing, we need to start with a little European history lesson.
That's right. Back in 2009, the EU realized that even though rare diseases might not affect a lot of people individually when you put them all together,
yeah,
they actually impact a pretty big chunk of the population. So they started these big projects to boost care and research for rare diseases.
So that's where things like the Cross-Border Healthcare Directive and those European reference networks, the ERNs, come in.
Exactly. The Cross-Border Healthcare Directive is all about making it easier for patients to get care in other EU countries.
So breaking down barriers.
Yeah. And ERNs are these networks of healthcare providers from different countries, but they're all focused on the same rare disease.
So basically, they can share their knowledge and work together to find new treatments.
Right. The report actually mentions that these networks are being evaluated right now just to see how effective they've been.
Makes sense. Got to check in and see if they're actually working, right?
Yeah.
So how did the Netherlands take all these big European plans and turn them into national laws? Was it a smooth process?
Well, let's just say it wasn't exactly easy. They created the national plan for rare diseases.
Uh-huh.
But there were some legal problems along the way. In 2018, the whole legal basis for designating expertise centers got challenged.
Oh, wow. So they built this system but didn't quite have the solid legal ground for it.
Right. So they tried to fix it by making the ECZA procedure part of this existing law called the Wet Abizonder Medische Verrichtingen, which is the law about special medical procedures.
Ah, okay. So they were trying to fit the rare disease centers into that broader law. Did that actually work?
Well, the report says things are still a bit unclear. It's especially messy when it comes to rare cancers and how to organize those networks.
Hmm. So even with all these European directives and national plans, it sounds like the Netherlands is still figuring things out.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's even before we get to how they decide which institutions become expertise centers.
Right.
And that's where this report gets really interesting.
It does.
They're very critical of the process.
Yeah.
And say it's really lacking transparency.
Yeah.
And a lack of transparency. That always makes me nervous.
Right.
What exactly are they worried about?
Well, think about it from the perspective of a patient organization. They work so hard to get recognition and support for a certain rare disease.
Okay.
They go through this whole process of applying for expertise center status, submit tons of paperwork.
Right.
And then silence.
Oh, no.
Or they get a decision, but it doesn't make any sense. They don't get any explanation.
Wow, so frustrating. It's like you don't even know the rules of the game you're playing.
Exactly. And that's one of the biggest criticisms in the report, that they say the whole decision-making process isn't clear at all.
Hmm. Like a black box. Mm. Applications go in, decisions come out, but nobody knows what happens in between.
Right.
And I imagine this lack of transparency has real consequences for patients and researchers.
Absolutely. I mean, if the criteria for getting that designation aren't even clear and the decisions are made in secret,
right,
it could lead to situations where centers are chosen for reasons that have nothing to do with their actual expertise.
So it could be things like political connections or even personal relationships that get a center chosen, not the quality of care.
It definitely raises those concerns. And when things aren't transparent, it can really hurt research and innovation, too.
How so?
Well, if researchers don't even know what criteria are being used to evaluate these centers, how can they focus their work? It's like they're just shooting in the dark, hoping to hit something.
It's like a big guessing game instead of having a clear strategy.
Exactly. But most importantly, this lack of transparency can directly impact patients. Imagine trying to find the best expertise center for your condition, but you can't find good information, or it's misleading. It's an added burden for patients who are already going through a lot.
That's a really good point. Just adds to the stress and uncertainty. And if you don't even know how these decisions are being made, how can you be sure you're getting the best possible care?
It makes it hard to trust the system. And the report says this lack of transparency isn't just about the big decisions.
Right.
Yeah, it's in every part of the process.
Okay, so give me some examples. What else is hidden from view?
Well, for one, they criticize how patient organizations are pretty much shut out of the application process.
Wait a minute. These are the organizations that know these rare diseases better than almost anyone. Why wouldn't they be involved?
The report says it's a missed opportunity. They could bring so much to the table, insights into what patients need, and helping make sure the criteria are actually relevant.
It's like trying to design a car without talking to the people who will actually be driving it. You might end up with a car that looks cool but doesn't work.
Right. And then there's the evaluation committee, the group that decides which centers get designated.
Right.
The report says that this committee is super secretive.
So the people who are making these important decisions, we don't even know who they are or how they were chosen. That's a little worrying, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely raises red flags. The report points out that we don't know anything about the committee, their expertise, the criteria they use, or even why they make the decisions they do.
So basically, they're making these life-changing decisions without any accountability.
Exactly. And it gets even worse. Even the advice they get from medical experts during the evaluation process, that's kept confidential too.
So there's a whole layer of expert input that we have no access to. Mm-hmm. It's like saying, trust us, we know what we're doing, but without showing us any proof.
Yeah. The report argues that this lack of transparency makes it really hard to make improvements to the process because you can't even see what's going on.
You can't fix what you don't know is broken.
Exactly. And there is another issue the report critiques, the idea of a care pathway, which is one of the criteria for getting designated as an expertise center, but nobody really knows what that means.
Hold on. We're talking about expertise centers, and now there are care pathways too. What exactly is a care pathway, and why is it a problem that it's not clearly defined?
Okay, so a care pathway is like a roadmap for treating a specific condition.
Got it. So it basically outlines all the steps involved from diagnosis to treatment and beyond.
Right. But the problem is the report says that care pathway is a very vague term in this whole process. Centers don't know what they have to show to prove they have a good care pathway, and it makes the whole evaluation process very subjective.
So instead of having clear guidelines, it's kind of a guessing game. No wonder it's so messy.
It's like saying, bake a cake, but not giving them a recipe. You might get something that looks like a cake, but it might not taste good or even be safe to eat.
Okay, so we've got this lack of transparency in how decisions are made, unclear evaluation criteria, and this vague care pathway concept. It doesn't sound good. Does the report have any suggestions on how to fix all this?
Yes, they do. And it's not all bad news. They actually have a bunch of specific and practical recommendations.
Okay, well, let's hear them. How can we make this system more transparent and patient-focused?
It all boils down to more transparency at every level. They're basically saying, open everything up, let everyone see what's going on.
Love it. More sunshine. So what did you mouth are they recommending?
When it comes to decisions, they want clear explanations. Why was this center chosen and not that one? They want the criteria to be public, the reasons to be written down, and the whole process to be open for anyone to see.
So basically moving away from this secretive system to one that's open and accountable. Makes sense to me. What about patient organizations? How can they be more involved?
Right. So the report says that patient organizations should have access to all the application materials and the criteria being used so they can give their input.
Yeah, it just makes sense to include the people who are most affected by these decisions.
Exactly. And about that secretive evaluation committee, they want a complete overhaul.
Okay. What does that mean?
They want us to know who's on the committee, what their qualifications are, and they want the committee to give detailed explanations for their recommendations.
So no more hiding in the shadows. They need to be accountable for their decisions.
Yeah. Basically, they're saying, we want you to trust us, but we also want you to see how we work.
I like that. What about the care pathway issue? How do they propose to fix that?
They say that they need to come up with a clear definition for what a care pathway actually means in this context, maybe even a standard template that everyone can use.
So everyone's on the same page and there's less confusion.
Right, and they even suggest having specific requirements for care pathways. For example, showing that they're using evidence-based practices or that they ensure continuity of care.
So it's not enough to just say, we have a care pathway. They need to show that it's a good one and it actually benefits patients.
Exactly. And another important point. The report says that we need to figure out how to fund these expertise centers properly. They need to have enough resources to actually provide high-quality care and research.
So it's not just about giving them a label, it's about giving them the tools to actually succeed.
Right. And all of these recommendations are really based on one very important idea.
What's that?
That this whole process of designating expertise centers should be about helping patients, not about protecting institutions or bureaucrats. It should be transparent, accountable, and focused on improving the lives of people with rare diseases.
I think the report does a great job of showing how to make the system more patient-centered.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think? What can patients and advocacy groups do to actually make these changes happen?
That's a really good question. I think it's going to take all of us working together to make a difference. And that leads me to a thought for our listeners. How can patients and advocacy groups get involved and help create a better system for designating expertise centers, one that is more transparent and includes everyone?
Yeah, it feels like we've been talking about this whole hidden world, you know, like these decisions are being made that affect real people, but most of us don't even know what's happening.
Right, and that's exactly why it's so important for patients to speak up. It's not just about awareness, it's about actually having a say in how things work.
Okay, so how do we do that? How can patients get involved and make their voices heard?
I think the first step is knowledge. The more people understand this whole system, the better they'll be able to advocate for change.
So it's about giving patients and their families the information and tools to navigate all of this.
Exactly. And patient advocacy groups can be a big help here. They can provide resources and education, even connect patients with people who make these decisions.
So they can help bridge that gap between the people affected and the people in power.
Yeah. And once you have that connection, you got to use it. Patients and advocacy groups can lobby, participate in public discussions, and share their stories to show how these policies affect real lives.
Because stories can be really powerful.
Right.
It's one thing to talk about abstract ideas, but hearing someone's personal experience can make it much more real and urgent.
Absolutely. Stories can connect with people on an emotional level, and that can be really effective in changing policy.
So it's about raising awareness, sharing stories, and pushing for change. But it's also about making sure those in power are actually listening and doing something about it.
Right. Accountability is key. We can't just make suggestions and then forget about it. We need to keep track of what's happening, see if things are actually improving, and make sure they follow through with their promises.
It's like we all need to be watchdogs, making sure the system is working for the people it's supposed to help.
I like that. And that's something everyone can do, whether you're a patient, a family member, or just someone who cares about this issue.
It sounds like it'll take all of us working together to make a real difference.
It will, but this report gives me hope. It shows us that change is possible, and there are steps we can take to make things better for people with rare diseases.
It's like they've given us a map and some tools and said, okay, now go out there and make it happen. Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive. We've learned so much about this issue that most people probably don't even know exists.
It has been, and it's really important that we keep talking about it.
Absolutely. To all our listeners out there, keep learning, keep asking questions, and keep fighting for a healthcare system that puts patients first. Until next time, stay curious.